the heart of it.
Roy West kicking in towards the centre. Roy's
a distinctly Tasmanian conversation.
I can feel what it will be like when Tassie plays his first game, and I just...
Towards half forward, Stewart flying over the top. Oh, pulled in a beautiful pass.
Well done from Scott. After all, Stewart has got the first goal. Has it gone?
Nichols has had the big ruck with it. Oh! Croswell!
Welcome to The Heart of It, a distinctly Tasmanian conversation. The game of Australian rules football has many appealing elements, but nothing draws the gasps of excitement or the roar of adulation quite like a player standing on the shoulders of another and pulling in a good old-fashioned specky. Jamie Elliott on Anzac Day, case in point. My guest today has been doing it since his teens. The Dodgers' ferry flyer, Jeremy Howe, has wowed the masses across a 14-season career that last year culminated in the ultimate, a premiership with Collingwood. The moment of his sporting life. But life has not always been about big highs. Howe has endured his share of harrowing experiences, a brutal introduction to AFL football at Melbourne, and the tragic and unexpected death of his mother, the horrific injury that almost derailed his premiership ambitions and took him to some seriously dark places. This is Jeremy Howe's story.
Grew up in Dodgers Ferry. Like a lot of my closest mates back there are still there. So I'll get back when I can and get to hang out. But yeah, I think growing up in Dodgers, small community, footy was kind of like the be-all and end-all in terms of the most enjoyment that we got. We all went to school together, played footy together, basketball as well. We kind of had a dabble in a lot of things. Footy was probably the most enjoying factor that we all got to share together. So yeah, kind of like all my mates, literally, my closest mates only just retired from senior footy down in Dodgers this year. So who's that? So you got your Brad Jacksons, John O'Bullock, Jack Siggins, Tim Cannon. So they're like the awesome foursome. They've been there the whole way through, even since I've left. They've still played there the whole way through. But they just said they're too old and they're over it. So, and to be honest, they're all 2 years older than me. So they're 35, and which is, to be honest, that's probably the good time to give it away.
So your brother's age, are they? He's a couple of years older.
So Justin's the next year above, so he's 36. He had 3 ACLs, really bad injuries, really struggled to get back. He had a taste of under-18s for Tassie, didn't quite transition to make it through, but he was probably the one that inspired me to play. He was always better at me than in every sport, very good at tennis, very good at basketball, very good at football. And he was obviously the one that I idolised coming through. He showed me how to play all three. And then we went through a bit of a transition phase where I started pipping him at most things. So it started at basketball, then it went to tennis, and then it went to footy, and then he just retired out of all of them. So, but yeah, we had great footy. Probably one of the most special moments at Dodgers playing senior footy together. We both used to sit in the forward line, get in each other's way, have an argument, but then be able to move on. So they're memories that you certainly get to look back and enjoy. And yeah, he's a big part of, luckily, like I managed to get through and get out and got drafted, but he played a humongous role in that.
Who's got a better leap?
Yeah, me. He's about 6'3", so he's got me a little bit, but he was about 90, 93 kilos going through when he was up and going and fit. So he had about 15 kilos on me at the time. He was probably more your genuine centre-half forward contested player. And I was just a little light guy on the outside that generally jump on him. So
was that the only way you could take a mark against him, was to leap on his head?
Pretty much. Otherwise, he'd just stiff arm me out of the way. He was a lot bigger, a lot stronger. Predominantly, that's the older brother figure that you get. He bullied me around a little bit, but I was the quicker and lighter, more athletic one.
Talking to people from regional parts of Tassie, those smaller communities, the theme that comes through often is just that freedom you had as a kid. Is that your experience in Dodgers? You were always outside, always had a ball in your hand, probably mischief from time to time.
It was. Like, we were grateful as kids. Very rarely did we ever get to miss out on anything. My family was heavily sport dominant on one side, and on the other side of the family, it was a bit more, cars, and the farm life, which for me growing up, I pretty much had every avenue covered. Also growing up with my older brother, Justin, then on like my mum's side, like I'm the youngest on both sides. So all my cousins are a lot older than me. So it was challenging at times. So Christmas Day's got a little bit hectic. But
especially when your cousins are the Wades.
Yeah. So I think that's on my mum's side. My brother, being a lot older, loves sport. Matty, love footy, love cricket. I got plenty of experiences on the way through. Uncle Scott was very good. My old man was quite capable in footy and other sports as well. But yeah, I think going back to the freedom part, I think that's where you always enjoyed, and you're probably predominantly you played your best footy. Going back, we grew up on 5 acres, so plenty of space, and very rarely would you spend any time inside. So I think, you know, where you look around now, young kids and that have got phones, they've got plenty of access to social media, laptops, iPads, all that. For me as a kid, that was just non-existent. It just didn't even register at all. So I think that's where you became your most active. You start finding the joys in life, where you start steering towards what you get gravitated to. And sport was always something that I loved. Tennis was probably my most dominant sport as a kid. And then when I was training before school and after school, it probably just got to me, training on my own. I just started not enjoying it. I needed to be around other people. All my mates were still playing footy, but I transitioned out and started playing tennis on my own. And then I did that for like 18 months, then I had to go. I was like, nah, I'm just not enjoying it. And that's probably where the freedom bit came out. I was very regimented, had a heavy schedule just in training, flat out, and it was all on my own. And I'd like to think now I'm a bit of a self-motivator, I can get myself going. But when I was going back to like 14, 15, 16, I found that probably pretty hard to deal with. Thankfully, went back to footy, probably made the right choice in the end.
Yeah.
Because ultimately ended up working out. But it's almost gone full circle. It's like you get drafted, then you go into like a really strong schedule, getting told where you need to be, what you need to do flat out. Probably you need to be told how to play as well. Whereas probably where I am right now, like the shackles have just been completely let off. And then the enjoyment, I think you've only got to watch the way that we play. Everyone's having a good time. Everyone seems to be smiling, laughing. And to be honest, our game plan doesn't look too different to like under 12's footy. We get it, kick it as hard as you can, knock it on. Whoever gets it, goals, everyone cuddles each other, moves on. So yeah, for me to be able to kind of finish my career at a club that really the enjoyment factor has gone through the roof is probably the best case scenario.
That's awesome, yeah. And you can see it in the way that you guys play and what Craig's brought and the infectious enjoyment that goes through the group. The 5 acres at Dodgers, so what's the property like? Are you the classic country kid who's got the goalposts up? What's the setup for sport in the backyard?
We do. So we had like almost like a little mini golf course that we'd set up. Neighbours used to get it where a few stray balls that we'd hit over the fence, but we all got along, so that was okay. But a lot of golf, but then footy, you'd set up pretty almost like the most challenging thing. You'd have I just remember so clearly, we'd have a telegraph pole we'd use as one post, and then literally we'd just jam like a fence post in next to it. But it never used to be any further than maybe 2 metres wide. So me and my brother would just live out there having endless shots with goals that were probably 1/5 of the size. So when you get to the oval and you look at the goals, you're like, geez, they're wide. I still managed to miss plenty, don't get me wrong. But I think it's probably the most, as a kid growing up, I've never been in a more highly competitive environment, and that was like the family. Everyone loved doing everything to full tilt. A lot of it had to do with sport. And Wadey is the most competitive guy that I've ever met. And thankfully, like my wife used to play high level basketball. She goes, I'm competitive, and then I met your family. She goes, now I just don't enjoy it at all. And that's even at Christmas times these days. So yeah, I think looking back at that, you probably get molded into the person you are with the people that you hang around with. And yeah, highly grateful on both sides of my family. I had an amazing setup.
What do you reckon when you reflect the growing up in Tasmania, how did that shape you then?
I think it certainly makes you incredibly humble. I think growing up with like tight-knit families, I think really close friendships, like I've never been one to like yes, I know a lot of people, but I'm not one to really let absolutely everyone in and have a piece of you from all over the centre. So I think it's probably the one thing is of being able to achieve or feel is being incredibly grateful for what I have. Like, yeah, I do have the most amazing family back home. I don't get to see them that often, but when I go back, the time is valued and it's like really important to me. So I think growing up, what has it taught me is, like, it's always never forget the people who have given everything for me, like given me the opportunity. I'd like to feel like I've always given back to my family, always keep in contact. Like, I'll ring my nan every week. Like, she's 80, I think she's about 87. Diehard Collingwood fan.
Was originally.
Yeah, was originally. All that. So she was Collingwood, my auntie Tanya's Collingwood, my auntie Cheryl's Collingwood, dad's Collingwood, and then I was Collingwood. My brother's Richmond, mum was Carlton. So it was a pretty heavy household at the time. But she's like, that. She reckons the last 2 years I put her under more stress than ever. I thought, like, with all the close wins and close losses and small margins, but they all love it. Keep in contact with them regularly, text and calls, which is great. Always want to keep them close, arguably, because they're the ones who give me every opportunity to be where I am. So, yeah, you get small learnings along the way, but I just think it's just to be kind, always be grateful. And, yeah, my family certainly aren't going to be ones who are going to let me get ahead of myself, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think that's a very Tasmanian thing, isn't it? Don't let anyone get too ahead of themselves, and that's a good thing, actually. Yeah. Your move from Dodgers Ferry to the Hobart Football Club seems like a bit of an important phase in your footy development and putting you on the radar. How did it come about?
Yeah, so my coach at Dodgers Ferry, Danny Ling, is quite prominent within the footy world down there, highly successful player and coach. So we sat down at the end of the year and Roach was just like, I just feel like for you to have a crack at it again. Like, I was 19... 20, so I'd missed out the first couple of years. Obviously broke my leg when I was 18. 19, I played as an overage for Tassie, but was no good. Just had a really bad carnival. Didn't get picked up, which is understandable. Then I was still playing under Dodgers. And then when I was 20, at the end of that year, Danny's like, I feel like you should go and have a crack in the TSL. Just have 1 year. If you don't like it, we're always going to be, you can come back. So I was like, oh, where do you want me to go? I was like, I know of the TSL. I was like, but I don't know any players that were playing, as in that were close to me. So I was like, oh, I'm not sure what I'm going to do. But Lance Spalding, again, heavy influence on my career when I transitioned to Hobart. He was there as an assistant coach, and him and Danny are really good mates. And so how that unfolded, he's like, oh, I reckon you should go to Hobart. This is how it's going to unfold. And then as soon as I got there, they looked after me. Played with a guy like Michael Cassidy was there. So he went off at Dodgers, he was at Lindisfarne. Yeah. We used to clash all the time. And then funnily enough, we ended up at the same club. Blair Keane, I was doing TAFE as an electrical apprentice. He was at Hobart. So then all of a sudden I was like, I've got a few touch points here. Heath Neville was there. But that year we ended up playing. We weren't really good. I think we won maybe 4 or 5 games for the year. But it was amazing, there's an element of luck that comes into play. It's probably back when I got drafted. I think the pathways, especially with the team coming in, is definitely going to transition and make that a lot easier and get some eyes on players that predominantly maybe not get them. The recruiters from Melbourne were looking at Jay Bowden, and his accolades speak for themselves. Like, he pretty much wins wherever he goes.
Yep.
Individual awards through the roof. Like, and to be honest, all credit is due because he's an unbelievable player. They came down to look at him when we played Glenorchy, and funnily enough, we just played out of our skins and smacked them, and I managed to play a really good, really strong game. And from that moment on, Barry Prendergast, who was a recruiter, flew back to Melbourne. He's like, we're looking at the wrong bloke. We need to start watching this guy. And then from that moment, yeah, must have done enough to be able to get picked up. So, yeah, it's amazing how it happened, because if they weren't looking at Jay in that one game, I probably wouldn't have got looked at. Well, I definitely wouldn't have. And then from that game, it just obviously the eyes got turned. And it's unfortunate for Jay, because I feel like he could have had a massive impact in the AFL. Like, he always got knocked for not being quick enough. You look at a lot of people in the AFL, that doesn't have to be your strength. Like, your IQ, your decision-making, your skills are all valued now.
It was must-watch, Jez, going to the TCA in those days. I vividly remember it. We were doing games on the ABC in those days, and knowing that we were doing a Hobart game at the TCA and you were playing, it's like, I think we know who's going to take mark of the day today.
I think that the TCA and the whole ground, there's like, it becomes like a... I think that's a great thing about footy in Tassie. Everything's like a community. And it's like, as soon as I rocked up, no one knew who I was. And it's like, but as soon as you get there, even like the fans at that level... They get drawn to you. They make you feel warm and welcome and valued. And it's like at that moment, you're like, So instantly, I reckon I took a little bit to get going, but then the enjoyment came through. I was like, started having a great time. It was like, you make really good friendships. Again, like, our team wasn't that strong and wasn't going that well, but I still had an amazing experience for 12 months. And how it unfolded was like, yep, I'm grateful to Hobart and what they were able to give me, the opportunity. And yeah, I think the TCA used to be like an unbelievable, like, cauldron, especially in that, the bench side wing to behind the goals. It's like the noise that would come out of that, it wouldn't have to be full, but the noise that would come out of that joint was through the roof. So yeah. It's like, I know it's like there's that one clip where guys, I think it was Trent, what's his last name? He ended up kicking me the ball from centre half back, and I took that hanger on the front centre half forward. We're playing
Glenorchy.
It was one of the Magpie team.
Yeah.
But like, you can hear someone yell out from the crowd. They're like, "How is ball?" And it's like, it's just come off his boot. It's like, and sure enough, come through, glove it. That was when I had one of my worst hair days. Big peroxide.
I was going to ask you about that. The thing I like peroxide about that clip the most is when you take the mark, it's being filmed at the time, and someone in the crowd goes, "Did you get that? Did you get that?"
Yeah. So that's probably speaks for itself. It was like, if you can hear that, there's not too many there, but the ones that would show up were the most loyal supporters of all time. And yeah, it was a great experience, and I loved every bit of it. It's a shame it wasn't there for longer, but what they were able to do for me certainly never goes underappreciated.
So where did the Woe Woden bleached hair come from?
Well, my mum's not going to... She wasn't a massive fan of it because she was a hairdresser for a long period of time. And she would tip my hair, and then I started developing like a solid mullet where the hair would flow out the back, and unfortunately the tip cap didn't cover that down the bottom, so we'd just paint and bleach all the bottom down the back. It was just one of those ones where I think growing up, people used to dabble in different hairstyles and that, and I certainly went down the peroxide blonde mullet type setup, and maybe got some extra eyes on it. But it's one that I haven't gone back to in terms of the mullet. I dyed my hair in COVID. That was, I don't know, I just think maybe I just had a crack at it because I knew no one would see me for a long period of time. But yeah, getting on a little bit now, I don't think that'll come back anytime soon.
Tell me about your mum and your dad and their importance in your growth as a person and to where you got to.
Yeah, I think I used to find talking about my mum really challenging since the passing, and that was 7 years ago now. And as I've kind of progressed on, I just talking about her influence as me as a person. I think, you know, I always got talked about through the family as I was heavily drawn to my mum. I think youngest out of both sides of the family, I was always probably felt sheltered and safe underneath my mum. I think my personality traits and why I probably have close connections with a lot of people is through her. There's not many people. I think her funeral spoke for itself. I think it was one of the biggest funerals Hobart ever hosted. Like, I remember walking out of the place and there was hundreds of people lined up out of there that couldn't get in. I think that just speaks for volumes of the person that she was, and incredibly loving, always giving. And I think maybe like gift giving is something that gives me the greatest enjoyment in life. I love giving things to people, and she was probably the one that I got that from. So her influence through that couldn't be any stronger. My dad, again, like, he was a fiery for 35 years, worked shift work. So it was like half time he's there, then half time he's not. And we grew up and we just made it work. And to be honest, it worked unbelievably well. I got my competitive nature through him. Like, he was highly competitive in anything that he did, still is. Like, we play golf together and we generally get into some form of argument halfway through the round. But he was the one who showed me work ethic, like how to train, how to be an athlete, really. Dad was probably a lot more down the discipline line. He was pretty, I think when you say harsh but fair, growing up you probably think more harsh than fair. But I think even for me growing up, I've got a young fella Xander now, I think you kind of somewhat try to strike the balance, and I feel like I'm still working on it. But the way that they worked together and brought us up, like I said early in the piece, me and my brother couldn't have wished for a better duo. And I think they balanced each other out to the point where they worked off one another, and it just made it really efficient for us. We always felt valued and loved, which is all you ever want as a kid. Never missed an opportunity in terms of sport, academics, wherever we wanted to go to school, wherever we wanted to play, they were always doing it. So I owe everything to both of them. And it's one of those ones, it's a shame that my mum passed on, because I knew that they would be together forever. Yeah. It was like, my dad's 62. Like, mum passed away when she was 56, out of nowhere, which was the most shocking thing of all time. So, yeah, it's been challenging. Like, the last thing is, like, you want to see is, like, one of your parents, like, just be on their own for long periods of time. And I'm hoping my dad manages to find someone, because he deserves it. And, like, when that happens, I'm not too sure. But, yeah, it's been a really hard time. Like, if I was talking about mum even probably 2 years ago, I'd be a mess and I'd be all over the shop. I can definitely still fall into that space at times.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've got photos up and of her, and speak of her a lot, because I can't help it. She's generally the first thing that I think of every day when I wake up.
Yeah.
Mm.
I don't have a too dissimilar experience myself, mate. And yeah. I know how much it impacts you when you lose your mother unexpectedly, and you never. Yeah, I was the youngest boy as well, so
yeah.
I had a very similar experience. I don't yeah. think there's ever been anything more challenging in my entire life than that. It's
yeah, I think even when I found out, it was 6:02 a.m. and I was in Katherine, 420k south of Darwin, doing a trip with my best mate from Port Hedland up the Gibb River Road to Broome, Gibb River Road, go to Darwin, finish in Katherine, and then my brother rang me and told me, and I was just like, almost told him where to go. It was like, this just couldn't have happened. Anyway, so they told me, and then I blacked out from there all the way to Dodgers Ferry. Can't remember driving to the airport. I don't remember flying to Melbourne. My wife picked me up at Melbourne Airport, put me on a plane, flew to Hobart. We cabbed from the airport. So it was 17 hours it took me to get home. And I don't remember one bit. And all I remember is the first thing I saw was my dad. And then at that moment, that's when you're like, this is actually real. Sorry for swearing, but I was like, I know those next few days are the worst experience that anyone could ever go through, really. And clearly you've done the same. And yeah, I think not being there and being away, that's probably the most challenging part that I struggled with. And then post that happening, even as time goes by, still not being there for my dad when he needs me to be there, or hanging out with my brother when we're all going through the same, but not being together as a three, like us three boys. We'd like to think we're all strong. I've never been more vulnerable and probably weak in my life, I don't think. And there's still times where I fall into the place where almost get a little bit like, why us? Like, why did it happen to us? Like, we just felt like we're just going to be good forever and away we go. But yeah, I revisit it emotionally a lot of the time, and I probably don't talk about it enough, but my instant thought process goes to my dad and my brother is like, I want them to be okay. So I was like, whatever I can do to be able to facilitate them feeling good, I'll always be that guy. And that's certainly reciprocated. Like, I'll get more support than anyone. So, and I definitely feel that. And I probably at the time, I didn't feel like I needed it as much, but I still do. And thankfully my wife's all time, she's been enormous. So yeah, it's a tough one, and it ripped the heart out of the family for long periods of time, and still does. But yeah, we're kind of getting through it, and still will.
Yeah, yeah. No, thanks for sharing it, mate. Let's go to something more joyful then. Take your mind back to 2010 when you're at Rest Point Casino, aren't you? When your news comes through that you've been drafted, pick 33.
That's it. So. Yeah, it was back then where like we didn't have like the Foxtel or whatever it was when at the time, and we made a collective decision on a Thursday night. We're all going to go up to the casino and watch the draft. There was a minivan that left from Dodgers. It fit about 12 of us in. Mum, Dad, a few of their friends, me, my brother, and a couple of my closest mates. So like, we'll go up and just see what happens. So, like, because there was no certainty, but we're like sitting up there, started drinking a few drinks. Given it was so early, and then we kind of like kept drinking. It was like second round. I was sitting on a stool, and then next minute I've just been absolutely spear tackled off the stool. I was like, I thought someone was attacking me. On my back, beer's gone everywhere, glass gone everywhere, and the boys are just shaking me. And they're like, you're going to Melbourne. I was like, what? And yeah, sure enough, second round, pick 33, got drafted to Melbourne. And then yeah, it was a crazy experience. I think we ended up staying there till about 1:30 in the morning. And I was, I remember me and Dad just hugging and almost wrestling on the floor out the front, waiting to get back in the van. Got home, 2 o'clock, probably head on the pillow, sleep by 2:30. And then we all woke up. I said to Mum, I was like, you're going to have to drive me to work. I can't drive. I was like, I'm well over. It's like, I was only on my P's at the time. Actually, no, I might have been full your license because you can get it early in Tassie.
Yeah.
And, but anyway, I would have blown it to pieces. So I was like, and when I was only going around the road, so I got Mum to take me around. Got to work at like 7:30, and the boss was a massive Collingwood fan. And he's just like, oh, mate, I'd really like to congratulate you. Well done. Unbelievable experience. Like, I'm sure you're going to do really well, but we have so much work we need to do. So the next 2 weeks are going to be grueling for you before you go. I was like, what do you mean? He goes, well, you clearly got the 2 weeks notice before you can vacate. And I was like, mate, I'll give you the best 8 hours I can because I have to leave on Sunday. So I was like, I'll start work at Melbourne on Monday. I have to be in Melbourne moved by Sunday. And he goes, oh, I'll stuff that then, may as well have a barbecue. A few beers that day. And then I had a big going away event on the Saturday at home where like the nearest and dearest rocked up, a few drinks, got sent off on the Sunday, then straight into it on Monday.
How long did it take you to find your feet at Melbourne?
Yeah, it took me a little bit. One that, because for me, moving to Hobart from Dodgers wasn't daunting enough. I was still living under the roof of my parents. But then moving and playing at Hobart was like, Jesus, this is pretty big. So moving from Tassie to Melbourne, although it's like looking back at it now, it's probably the easiest move that someone would try and make. I found it really hard. It's just more the seeing and the touch points of family members and friends. So I moved straight in with Colin Garland took me in.
Yep.
Tassie boy, and I had no affiliation to Garlo pre getting drafted. But he looked after me for the first probably 3 months, driving me in and out everywhere, started like showing me the ropes of diet, obviously training. So I was incredibly grateful for that. And then I moved in with Matty Wade for maybe like 6 months, I reckon. So him and Julia took me in. And that was, for me, it was great. Just having someone that, as soon as I got home from training, was someone like away from the club, but someone that who was really close to. And our relationship, him and my brother were really tight. And I was kind of like third wheeling it all the time because I was 3 years younger. From that moment on, my time early, our relationship went through the roof. And he'd be arguably one of my closest mates that I've got today. We give each other shit more than anything, but I think that's part of it. And so, yeah, how long? I don't know. It's hard to say. I reckon I'd probably, the full 12 months was hard. Probably then when you start playing and I got a debut, then people come over and they come and watch, and that's probably the support factor. Like very rarely is my family missing too many games, but yeah, I think once you start playing, you probably feel like that's a bit more valued at the club.
You debuted in the same game as Max Gawn, didn't you?
Yes, we debuted together. So it was a Friday night in front of about 40,000, which for me, I was like playing at the TCA in front of maybe 500 and then at Dodgers in front of 250. For me, that was out of control. We debuted together. Essendon were flying. We were going terrible. And we ended up pipping them by 33 points. And that was just like coming off the ground, like getting soaked with Gatorade, Powerade. But then seeing all the family members and how much joy they got out of that, I was like, yeah, it's worth it. It's definitely worth the move. So, yeah, it was, I think like everyone, and it's like the draw of, I don't know, if you have such a tight-knit family and you're drawn and you're really close, I think even today, like a lot of young guys struggle with interstate move. But that's where the club's responsibility comes into it, where you need to make them feel welcome, valued, and I don't know, feel like they're a part of it right from the get-go. And a lot of us struggle until you play. So there's a lot of guys coming into the system, don't play for 3-4 years. And they're like, what am I doing? So I was like, what comes first? You'd like to think that the club would put their arms around you and make you feel like you're enough as soon as you walk in the door.
Yeah. Yep. That didn't happen at Melbourne?
I don't really. It was like probably because we were highly unsuccessful. I think the way that we were organised within the place was highly negative in terms of the communication, and what we were providing was clearly not good enough, which I agree with in terms of the results. But everyone, well, a lot of places now, you probably invested in the positives and what people do because it makes them feel good. Who's not going to play better when they feel good about themselves? If you're told 80% of the time that what you provide is not good enough, with like, oh yeah, there's that little bit that you did all right, you get instantly gravitated to the 80% of you're not good enough. So instantly I think that dampens the confidence, and therefore you probably don't play the footy that you're meant to. And I think as a collective, we got a lot of that. So then the feeling within the group was pretty low. And then the performance probably speak for themselves. Yeah. I think 100 games there for me.
20 wins?
20 wins. So it's like, if I won one, I'm pretty sure the next month was going to be pretty hard. But the friendships, again, I'm one that makes my relationships really tight. And I've still got a few close mates from that experience and ones that I'd still speak to regularly, which is great.
So in saying that and given your experience there, was the move to Collingwood a relatively straightforward decision? Can you tell me how that actually first
eventuated
as a possibility?
Again, like the trade factor was, again, I started getting feelings from like moving from Tassie to Melbourne. It's like a daunting experience leaving the ones that are the closest to go to another place where you're not really sure where you fit in or what's going to happen.
So did you initiate the conversations or did they come at you? Or
yeah, so we kind of, it was a bit of both in the end. Like I sat down at the end of the year, it was in the transition of Roosie to Goodwin, and even like Goody, I spoke to Goody and we just kind of worked out where we're going to go. There was a contract on the table for me. He's like, this is what is on the table, this is where we kind of see you, where you're at. And I was like, great. It was a really honest conversation. And like, as a player and a management, you probably think you're worth more. And that's where the conversation started. But then I was like, maybe the conversation ended up going, it's like, if you hang around, it's like, if I was the coach, potentially you wouldn't be playing. It's like how I was playing. So I was like, probably hearing that was a bit of a tick in the back. Like I'd never been dropped in the AFL, still haven't, thankfully, touch wood. But hearing that, I was like, well, maybe I'll need a kick in the ass. That was probably the one that I needed. So I was like, maybe I need a fresh start to go somewhere else. And then that's probably where the conversation started steering. So caught up with Nathan in Bali, which was well documented. Thought we got away with one, but we didn't. Had a beer and talked about maybe like role specific / we feel like we can get a bit more out of you. Where I play now is couldn't be any more opposite to what we got provided at early stages. But I think the move for me, like I felt like I've always been a really good trainer. And then towards the end, I was like, probably wasn't feeling like myself. I'd call my family all the time. There was large chunks of the season where I just wouldn't speak to them just because I just wasn't feeling anything like myself. It was like, why would I just want to ring the family and dump what is going on in my life on them, because it's not great. So I'm not enjoying footy. I'm playing terrible. We're not winning. And the morale's pretty low. So I felt like I didn't have anything for them. Whereas my conversations now, anytime I ring the family, couldn't be any further away from footy. It's like, and I'm more invested in what they're going to tell me. I was like, my life's still very good and I'm grateful for it. But it's like, you tell me what's going on. I was like, I want to know what's going on back home. But yeah, the trade ended up eventuating. And looking back, that was 8 years ago now, which is an amazing thing. But it was easily by far the best decision I've ever made in terms of my sporting career. I felt like my footy's been more consistent and I've played a lot better footy since I made the move. Funnily enough, down back.
Mm. You went as a wing or a half forward?
I was going to play like wing, half forward. But then I debuted like round 3, played against St Kilda forward, played Anzac Day as a forward. And then the third game, all the backs went down. And they're like, unfortunately, mate, you're the only guy that we've pretty much got who's got experience from playing back. I think I played about 40 games as a back at Melbourne. And I was like, mate, I'm more than happy to do that. I was like, the role for me, as long as I'm playing, it's like I'm all about it. And then from that day forward, I didn't get a look in the forward 50 for a long period of time, apart from maybe this year, really, where Fly threw me down there for a couple of games. But easily the best decision looking back on it now. I think like my enjoyment for footy definitely came back. Like my relationship to Bucks was through the roof and still is. Like I caught up with him for lunch last week. And he was the one that, if you want to feel like you're valued and you are enough, he gave everything that I required as a player. And it brought the best out of me. And that's all I think players really ask for. And the relationship piece was like, I'm willing to give every bit of myself for this guy. And I'm like, thankfully, I'm like that with the coaches that we have now.
Yeah.
And I think that's brought the best out of me. Like, I'm 33. If I was at Melbourne, I would have been delisted 7 years ago, probably. So
You really feel like that was where it was heading?
Pretty much, I think, yeah. Which, to be honest, I feel like it benefited both parties. I left. They certainly got their act together and they were lucky enough to win the flag. And not lucky enough. Ultimately, their list is well and truly good enough. And they obviously put the right people in the right places to be able to get there. I was highly envious. I was like, potentially I wasn't going to be there. Maybe I was going to be delisted at that stage. But you also think, it's like, geez, if I'm around, maybe that could have been me. So the next couple of years were pretty hard, but got one back, which is nice. So yeah, it's gone full circle there a little bit in terms of the success factor. But because when I left Melbourne, the first 2 years at Collingwood were hard. We weren't good. We weren't winning. I played 7 Queen's birthdays in a row, lost them all. So as soon as I went to Collingwood, I was like, we lost both of them. I was like, it's me. It's me. I was like, Bucks, it's me. Maybe don't play me in the next one. But then since then, our record speaks for itself in terms of wins, losses against the D's, which is pleasing.
If he didn't play, we wouldn't have seen that mark on Tom McDonald in front
of us. So thankfully he gave me the gig. But been a great experience. Like even looking back, like 13 years in, getting drafted late. That's why I think, grateful as we were that I used regularly, but to be at my age and still playing for a really good club is a special experience.
You mentioned Nathan Buckley. Give me a sense of Craig McRae and his influence and impact.
Yeah, I think he's probably the best people manager that I've ever seen. Like everyone who's got a role within to where we're going has influence on what we're doing, I think. And Bucks wouldn't mind me talking about it. He used to be quite over the top in terms of he wanted to influence a lot of areas, and therefore probably maybe people in certain areas didn't feel like they had the right responsibilities to be able to fulfill their role. He grew out of that, and it was a great transformation and became one of the greatest delegators I've seen. Fly naturally probably became that straight away. And I think relationships is something that you speak about often, but he invested a lot of time into guys right from the start. Like he spoke to me on the phone for 45 minutes before I knew anything about him, before he came to the club, the whole lot. He obviously got the gig, then he instantly just called a few guys from the club. And it's like, I got off the phone. It's like, how do I know him? I was like, oh, I had to have had a dealing with him from somewhere. And I hadn't. But it's like that instant connection that you get from a guy who's clearly really good at that. I think the way he motivates us, brings us in together, he seems to have got the best out of a lot of people. Like we've got, even our oldest guys are still performing really strongly. Like even you speak to Steele Solomon, his energy levels and his output has gone through the roof again. It potentially dipped a little bit in 2020. He got into a bit of strife. That might have had a little bit of factor towards it. But I think Fly's just been one right from the get-go. He's like, righto, this is where we are going. And I think the people around him have played a huge role in that as well.
Yep. Your arm, any concerns that you wouldn't get back from your arm? That was a horrific break. I remember Channel 7 at the time made the decision, and there were a lot of conversations happening in the background between the OB truck and those in charge at 7 about how to handle replays of that, but it was just too gruesome.
Yeah.
Did you have any concerns about what it all meant?
At the time, when you're in it, like laying on the ground in the middle of the G, probably not. I couldn't shake the pain. Like I feel like my pain tolerance is quite good. But the pain of that scenario is like nothing that I've ever experienced ever. I felt like when I got hit by a train, literally when Jacob Hopper's knock me, snapped my leg in half in 2020, I thought that was bad. That kind of disappeared. This was like someone had a blowtorch in the middle of my arm and just wouldn't let it go. And I was just like, I can't shake the pain. And I was like shaking on the stretcher, and I was like literally almost like shuddering for a long period of time. Thankfully, like I know, and I'm grateful for the non-showing of the clip, because all my family were at home. Like I had a couple of family members, I had dad and my wife in the crowd, but the rest of my family and friends weren't there. So they were all watching it. Clearly it was like the second game of the year. So everyone's like Friday night, everyone's watching. Because obviously the incident with my, I just remember looking down, my shoulder was hurting so much because obviously did my AC joint. I'm holding that initially. So I thought that was the worst. And then I saw Bruzzy, Braden Maynard, come over, and he's like, holy, because he came from the other side and my bone was just sticking out about 2 inches. And he's just like, turn around, he's like, told the boys, like, do not even think about going over there. And I was kind of like, had a moment, I was like, what's he looking at? And I looked, and then I didn't see the bone because it was on the backside, but my arm was like tucked into my elbow, tucked into my chest, but my arm was facing the bench, like it was just bent over there. I was like, well, that probably make a lot of sense why it's hurting so much. And then, that next half hour was excruciating because, like, I got the green whistle and all that made was, like, real heady, lightheaded, dizzy, did nothing for the pain. And then as soon as I got something plugged in my arm. That was enough to take the pain out. But yeah, I think in reflection, when you get into hospital and you get the repairs done, I was like, maybe it won't be as bad. But the infection was a thing for me that I was like, nah. I was like, I'm well and truly done. I was like, I can't deal with this. For what I was going through, it was like, for being in hospital for the best part of 2 weeks, five surgeries in like 11, 12 days. One was the initial surgery, which went really well. But then the next, all the washouts I was having like every third day, going in and out, in and out, in and out. I think spending a lot of time on my own in hospital, being heavily drugged, puts you in a state that all I'm thinking of is negative stuff. I was like, I'm 33, I'm this busted up. My son and wife come in, look at me, I was like, I look horrific. Like I can't even look them in the eye because I look that bad. Like, heavily drained, pale, my eyes are black, sunken, I'm drugged up. And I was like, do I really need to be like this at this age? I can't even pick Xander up. I can't touch him, nothing. I was like, there's not a lot of positives in this scenario. So this is all I'm telling myself. And Carly played a humongous role. She's like, just, let's just get through it. Let's get you out of hospital. That's all we need to do, get you out. Thankfully enough, I got out, and Fly and Righty came in a couple of times and saw me. Players were coming in flat out, and they were kind of like my highlights of the day to be able to see people. But also there was an element of like, far out, people are seeing me at my worst, like right now. Checked out, and then Fly's like, I want you to come in and be a part of the coaching panel. And I was like, that's all well and true, mate. I was like, but I've never felt the way that I'm feeling right now. I need to stay at home for 7 to 10 days. I'm hanging out with my wife and son. Thankfully, when I came back in, I didn't have a cast or anything. I literally just had a couple of waterproof bandages over my arm because there's so much metal in there that it was not going to go anywhere. And then as soon as you're around the people that clearly you value and you love hanging around with, like, don't get me wrong, Carly and Xander were giving me everything I needed at home, but it was like the other side that I still needed, knowing that they would continue on their journey through the year. Sitting at home wasn't going to be enough for me. So I got in, and that instantly made me feel better. I started running within about 10 days post that. And then all of a sudden you just have this block of work where you're like, maybe it's a chance. We still didn't put it, there was no time frame on me coming back. Because like the early days, the conclusion in hospital was like, you probably won't play. Like, don't even think about it. Just don't even contemplate putting it in your head that you're gonna play. Yeah, but then I just had a good block of work, everything started aligning. But until you get tackled, until you have to lay a tackle, until you get shit mixed or you fall over and you put your arms down, they were like milestones for me to be able to tick off. Took me a fair while to get there. Did some gymnastics, believe it or not.
Wow.
And it helped. I think that's a bit more, you're on a buoyant floor, falling down becomes a little bit easier. But then I suppose it was the feeling, I couldn't fully rotate my wrists. I couldn't fully extend my elbow, and my shoulder didn't operate well for a long period of time. So to fall down and put both my hands down, my tendons that had shortened so much that if I'd put my hand down straight, I felt like I was going to snap like all the tendons in my forearm because I didn't have the flexibility. Everything was so stiff. And to be honest, I reckon it'd be about 97% now. Like playing, going through range of movement, hitting the floor, pushing people off, that's actually got the range back that I require. And now there's nothing that I can't do that I've never been able to do in the past. But it takes a long period of time to get there. Like I think that's the most traumatic incident that I've had in terms of physical capabilities to my body, that I felt like I couldn't be any further back to getting to where I need to go. And that's, thankfully, Fly gave me the opportunity. I was like, he was walking off the track. I was like, stay there. So I got Neville Jetta with a tackle bag, and I tackled him as hard as I could about 3 times in a row. Did about 5 ground balls as hard as I could. Then I got him to tackle me as hard as I can. I was like, now you can go.
Come back, coach.
And then the following week, he ended up playing me. So first game was adrenaline. Second game, I got subbed out at halftime because we're up by 12 to 15 goals against Gold Coast. So they're like, we're just going to manage you. I was like, perfect. And then after that, I reckon probably the next 4 or 5 games, I was like pretty slow. I just trying to pick up on game trends, the intensity of actually playing. It's not really a sport where you can just go, oh yeah, I've had such a long period of time off, I'll be fine. So that took me a fair bit, and I felt like my last 6 games were my best 6 games of the year. So I felt like I finished where I probably was going to start. It was like, put in a lot of work, you get match hardened, your body starts feeling good, you start like enjoying being hit again. And I think that took some time, but once you get it back, you probably almost crave it. So
just that moment where your family's in the hospital and you're just feeling like the worst version of yourself, and then you contrast that with the end of grand final day when you greet your family out on the field, does your mind drift back to, gosh, I've come a long way. This is such a special thing to share with these people.
It is. I think the first question you ask yourself, is it worth it? Is like, is what is this moment right now, what we're experiencing right now, was what happened in round one worth it all? I'd like to think it is. But if anything like that happened to me again, I'll well and truly pack my bags and I'm out. I was like, I'm done. But I think, yeah, it's the whirlwind of emotions, like reflecting on a whole year or even a 22-week block where I was by looking like I got hit by a car with my injuries to ultimately holding a premiership cup with my son and my wife on the G. Yeah, that was probably the year where I thought I'd miss out, to be honest, because I wasn't sure if I'd get back. But I knew we were going to do something special given how we're going and where the club was at. So FOMO is something that I struggle with regularly, away from the game just as much as I do on field. But yeah, so glad that I got back. It's probably because I think when I speak about winning one, it's about repaying the faith to all those that did stuff for me. And I hope they get a little bit of, I know they get a lot of joy out of it, but hopefully they get a bit of fulfillment out of the sacrifices they made for me. So
yeah,
I think it is worth it.
Being so generous with your time, Jez, I just want to ask you a couple of quick ones about Tassie and the announcement of the Tasmanian team coming into the AFL, men and women. It's been a long-held dream for many.
Yep.
How did you feel when you heard?
Oh, unbelievable. I think, like, I've got a really close connection with my uncle Scott Wade, who's had a lot of influence through AFL Tas for a long period of time, and he's clearly stepped out of that phase for a fair few years now. But I guess being drafted from Tassie, you've always got your eye still on Tassie footy. Like, my relationship towards that is still really strong. I think going through, there was always talks going on in the background. I was like, so I got really excited early, and then all of a sudden, like, I was talking for so long, but didn't look like it was going to happen. It always just got put on the back burner. Don't worry about it. We'll revisit it in a couple of years. We'll do this. So it kind of deflates you a little bit. You're kind of like, well, it's not going to happen. And then all of a sudden, it picks back up in conversation. You're like, oh. And then it's like, oh. And then it's like, oh. And I know for a fact people in Tassie feel the exact same way. Because if you dangle something in front of them, all they want to do is grab it. And I think as soon as the announcement happened, I was just like, how good is this going to be for every single person in Tassie? The love of the game for the development of the girl side of the footy has been through the roof. And I feel like even like Dodgers Ferry has a women's team. That is something that I would never have thought would happen. And to be honest, they lost the grand final, but they had an unbelievable year. I just think it's going to be amazing, not only just for the growth of Tasmania in general. Like, yeah, they'll get plenty of... The economy would be great because I reckon they'll get... It would be a draw card to come down, visit unbelievable like stadium... Concerts, I'm sure, will follow. People will get drawn down. You've got an unbelievable venue to be able to host things like that. But the footy side of it, I feel like the development of the kids that are coming through, they're the ones who are going to benefit most. So like the academies that will be developed in northern and southern states, you can't help but feel like the money that gets invested in that, the kids are the ones that are going to be benefit. Both boys and girls get well looked after and get the resources they probably ultimately deserve, to therefore hopefully put on the Tasmanian jersey and play for them. I assume some and a lot will get drafted to other teams, which might be hard given there's now a team, there will be a team in place. If I got drafted to Melbourne and Tassie had a team, that would probably be even harder, I reckon, knowing that I can do what I do at home. That's probably where like the draw card to even go home is probably more appealing. But I just think it would be unbelievable. Everyone... Like, even my dad's been mad Collingwood his whole life. And he, like, watching him react to a team getting signed off was one of the greatest things you ever see. So I think, like, people, like, blew up at me at one stage when I said, Tassie will get a team. And I was like, even though people go for someone, they'll tack on and they will literally, they'll sign up, they'll buy memberships. It becomes something that they feel like is theirs. They've got their own state with their own team. Who else will have that? That once it starts, it's going to blow up pretty quick, I reckon, and everyone will jump on board and be a part of it, which I'd certainly love to be.
Yeah, you'd love to be involved, would you?
I think naturally, as I feel for someone that's been involved.
Wade's still playing, going to be playing cricket at 39, isn't he? You'll only be about that.
Yeah, he still reckons he's the best footy player in the family. I get told that regularly.
Played a few good games for the Devils, I remember.
He did. He got in more fights than he had kicks, but. Maybe a leadership space for him, who knows? But yeah, I think being, I think you'd be mad not to try and get people that have had long careers within the AFL, even whether it's like advice or just to be a part of something. I'm not saying I want to sign me up as a coach the first year that they're in as a team, because I don't even know where I'll be. Coaching is something that I'm highly invested into, but where I'll be at in 5 years' time, I'm not too sure. But yeah, I think I'm instantly drawn to this, to what that's going to look like. You've got investment towards what it's going to look like because you're from there. So I know Jack's a part of it. He'll be all in. I know he will be, and he'll be great for him. Clearly, his resume speaks for itself. So he sees what works. So I think his input would be highly valued.
In closing out, best footballer you played with or against in Tassie during your days in Tassie?
Well, I think Jay would have to be up there. I just think going into games, it's like you talk about doing opposition reports, was so hard because all you think about is stopping one guy, but you still couldn't. But there's also a guy who used to play at New Norfolk called Mickey Thompson.
Gun.
And he literally pulled us apart every single time. So things are going well. Centre half forward, kicks 6 to 8 goals. And then all of a sudden, if they're kicking into a gale force breeze, he plays centre half back, couldn't get it past him. I think he was one of the most intimidating guys I've ever played, especially young Boyer. Driving up, it's not real warm, but their fans are as hostile as any. And he would literally take the piss.
Favourite footy ground in Tassie?
Outside of Shark Park, I'd probably say North Hobart Oval. I think in terms of quality of deck, you can't go past Launceston's deck. Just because it's like playing on almost like a lawn bowls deck. But I think North Hobart, it's quite small, but I feel like it just feels like the capacity of people that are in there, the noise that comes out of it. And I was like, maybe experiences of playing in grand finals in underage and that kind of setup. I think that's probably one of my favourites.
Let's pretend Tassie's coming in next season. You've got one pick of the entire men's competition.
Yep.
You can select anyone in the league right now. Who would you pick?
It's pretty easy for me. Nick Dacos. I'll be poaching him as quick as you can.
He's in the right age bracket too.
Oh, he'll be... He's arguably like he's a marketer's dream. What he provides on field is ridiculous. I feel like he can build... It's like midfielders, yeah, they grow on trees. High-end decision-making, elite class, they don't. And he's got it all, and he's 20. So I think if you're poaching someone next year, you could have him for the next 15 years. So... Yeah, I'd be taking him.
Yeah, I think that's a very good selection. Your marks.
Yeah.
Hobart TCA
yeah.
against the Magpies. On top of Heath Grundy at the SCG or on top of Tom McDonald at the MCG? Which is your best mark?
I think the Sydney and the AFL ones. I know there's like the one in the TSL was pretty good. Bit of a chesty though. Blonde mullet probably makes it decline a little bit in the ratings. But Heath Grundy one was kind of like, I feel like I don't go for too many outlandish ones. Go up too early. Your Russell Robinsons of the world. Coat hangers blokes with his shins and doesn't get near the ball. He'll hate me saying that. But I think he just kind of held me up for so long that I was like, well, maybe I'm a chance to actually take it. And then in comparison, the Tommy McDonald ones, I've never been that high ever. Maybe when I broke my arm, but so they're a bit different. But I'll say the Sydney one because it's maybe worth something a bit more. So I managed to get something for it.
Now, let's be honest. For all your nominations, how many times have you been nominated for Mark of the Year? High 30s?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
How many times have you won it?
Once.
Have you been robbed, Jez?
Absolutely. That's a no-brainer. Easiest question of the day.
Jeremy Howe, Collingwood Premiership player, proud family man and father. High flyer. Thanks for listening to this episode of The Heart of It. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast and share with other Tasmanian footy enthusiasts. I'm Alistair Nicholson. Catch you next time.